Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 223, and we're a day late and a dollar short. But as my friend Pink Floyd says, the show must go on, and so must you, but you have to check some things first. We're also going to talk about Android radios and why they might be a great solution regardless of whatever kind of van you have. A product review of a MagSafe suction mount phone holder that's quite expensive, and a tale from the road involving limbs. Limbs, you know, limbs are important things. You don't really miss them until they're gone. Anyway, we'll move on from there. Welcome back, everybody. Thank you so much for joining me once again. I apologize for being late. This week has been one of those weeks where everything just lined up at the same time, and that same time was yesterday, which is Wednesday, which is the day I normally record the show. I have all these trips to plan, and so I thought, I'm going to do two things for you here. Two things. As a thank you for your patience, I'm going to open up Sticker Amnesty. What is Sticker Amnesty? Well, I am somewhat well known in my little tiny circle of friends for giving out stickers, hook, waka, bang stickers. They are like Euro decals, if you know what those white stickers you find on the back of vehicles that are kind of oval-shaped. And they have a question mark, a greater than symbol, and an exclamation point. And this symbol has been following me around now for about 10 years. I'm quite fond of it. It's my personal symbol that I use for whatever. And it is the official symbol of the College of Curiosity. And if you would like one of these stickers, normally what I ask folks to do is go to buymeacoffee.com/built2go and buy me a gallon of diesel and then send me your address and I'll send you a sticker. But now I'm not even going to ask you to donate to the show. If you live in the U.S. or Canada and you would like a hook, waka, bang sticker, just send your address to jeff@built2go.com. That's two T's, not three, not one. No, I'm not going to use your address for anything. I'm basically going to write it on an envelope and then lose it. So don't worry about me selling your lists or names to anybody. That is not my thing. I hate all that crap. I'm not a marketer, as you may have noticed. The other thing I have to announce is I need to be more social. So here's the deal. I'm going to tell you where I'm going to be. And if you happen to be in the same place as me and you'd like to meet up for a few minutes or coffee if possible or show off your rig or whatever, I would be more than happy to do that. But I am on tight schedules most of the time, so you basically will have to come to me, which sounds kind of selfish. But consider that I have probably flown and spent thousands of miles to get to where I am at that moment. So, yeah, it's kind of fair. So, just so you know, I am going to be in Timberline Lodge next weekend. So that is the weekend of, let me find a calendar somewhere, the 16th, Friday the 16th, that weekend. I will be at the Timberline Lodge the 16th, 17th, and 18th, including a little bit in Troutdale. I'm on the 17th. Again, tight schedule, but if it happens to work out and you're in the area, I would love to chat with you for just a minute. I will not have my van, unfortunately. I'm flying out there. I will have a rental car, which I'm happy to show you, but I don't think it'll be very exciting. In September, I'm going to be in Bermuda and New York City. In September, I'm going to be in Newport, Rhode Island, very briefly on September, I think it's the 8th, I could be wrong about that, and I will be in New York City on September 15th, and I'll have a little bit of time there. We're going to do the Intrepid and the Circle Line tour, and I'm going to be in Bermuda in the middle of the previous week, so from like the 9th to the 13th, and heck, if you're doing van life in Bermuda, I will come to you. I don't care where you are in Bermuda. I want to talk to you if you're doing van life in Bermuda, because I think that would be a fascinating conversation. And then in November, I am going to be in Budapest, or Pest, depending on how you want to pronounce it, and Prague, and everywhere in between. So the in-between parts are a lot more difficult, but I could meet up with you in Budapest, Prague, or Vienna. If you happen to be in any of those cities, I'd be happy to meet up. If you are, contact me and we'll work out the details. And I'm not going to go through my entire schedule here. But yeah, I've got a whole lot of travel coming up and I had to plan for 100 of things yesterday. And that's why we're day late. So anyway, I should probably stop talking now. Well, I should keep talking, but maybe more about the podcast. How about that? All right, so let's dive in here. So this podcast, I thought I'd talk about the things you should check while you're driving long distances. You know, you're driving for 10 hours, maybe several days in a row. You know, maybe you live in New England and you're going to the Rubber Tramp Rendezvous and that's a several-day drive. your vehicles are taking some abuse during this, and what should you do to make sure that they're healthy while you're driving? And so I made a quick list here, and some of the stuff is obvious, and some of it's a little less obvious, but let's dive in here. So first thing you should do, number one, is keep, as you're going, keep general track of your miles per gallon. You don't have to go crazy with this. You don't have to buy a special device that reads your vacuum pressure or any of that stuff. Simply take the number of miles you have driven and divide that by the number of gallons you have used. So you go to the gas station, you fill up, everything's at zero. You go to the next gas station, you drove 200 miles, you used 20 gallons of fuel, you got 10 miles per gallon. That's simple. The reason you want to do this is because often your engine will indicate there's something wrong by changing that number a lot. Now, usually if there's something wrong, it will go down because engines are typically optimized to get the best mileage possible. But sometimes the mileage will go up because some pollution control device that actually robs mileage has broken. So if you see a drastic difference in miles per gallon and nothing's changed, like you didn't start towing something or it didn't get really windy or you didn't start going uphill where you were going downhill the day before, that's a note that maybe you should take some time and look a little bit deeper under the hood and see if everything looks okay. You don't have to stop driving. You don't have to go to a mechanic right away. It's just a hint that maybe something's wrong. Number two, pay attention to your gauges. You know, maybe half an hour into the trip, take a look at the gauges and see where they are. See where normal temperature is. If you know, if you have a temperature gauge, sorry, Sprinter folks, Mercedes doesn't think we need temperature gauges for some reason. See where that line is, and then pay attention to it. Do not freak out if that line goes close to hot. Only freak out if it gets too hot. But notice if it moves, because that can tell you something. It's also bad if it doesn't get to the middle or near hot. If it stays at cold or just goes a little bit above cold, you've probably got a broken thermostat, which is a very cheap thing to fix. But you do need to fix that because that means your engine's going to run terribly. It's going to use a lot more gas because the engine thinks it's cold, even though it isn't. Now, if you don't have gauges because you have a Sprinter, what you can do is do what I did. I got a Blue Driver Bluetooth Pro device that plugs into the OBD2 port, and then on my phone, I have every gauge anyone has ever thought of. I can put any gauges I want on there and check. And on long trips, I will turn my phone to that app, and this works for Android too, and just have all those gauges going. And I definitely learn from these gauges. I can tell some things. Like one of the favorite things I have it set to is gallons per hour. How many gallons of fuel I'm using per hour. That's a very interesting indication of how heavy I am on the gas pedal. It also serves as a check engine light checker and resetter, which is also useful too. It's kind of expensive. There's cheaper options, but I'll have a link in the show notes. I'm only mentioning it because it's the one I have. Number three, when you stop for gas, you should always walk around the vehicle. Just take a walk around it. Just doing that is going to find all kinds of problems that could be going wrong. You might have a nail sticking out of a tire. You might have some piece of debris stuck somewhere. You might notice some molding flopping around. There's a ton of things you can find just by walking around. So always just walk around. And then check these three things, if not every stop, at least every once in a while. First is check your tires. Now, you're going to check your tire pressure before you leave, hopefully, that it is at the correct range for your load and the tires. And you check that not on the sidewall of the tire, but on your vehicle. Unless you've put on some crazy aftermarket tires, the temperature pressure written on the door jamb is the one you want to follow. And just make sure they all look the same. You know, see if any are sagging. And then if you think there might be a problem, go ahead and feel the tire. If it feels warm, that's okay. If it feels hot, like you can barely touch it, that's a problem. And feel the hubs too, right at the middle of where the wheel joins the car. That should be warm, but not hot. If it's hot, that's a sign of a problem. Once in a while, check the oil, use the dipstick, pretty simple. And also take a look at the coolant. Do not open the radiator. Don't open the radiator cap. That can be dangerous. You want to look at the coolant overflow reservoir, and you'll see there's a min and max there. You want the coolant to be in the middle. And that will move a lot, so don't freak out if it starts the trip at min and then goes up to maximum. It's meant to do that. It's an expansion chamber. So don't worry about that too much. By the way, side note, if you're in an emergency situation and that gets too low, you can put basically any kind of fluid in there. I mean, it's certainly not harmful to put water in there. You can put most kinds of antifreeze in there. I know there's special kinds of antifreeze, but in general, it's more important to have some liquid in there than not. And I remember back in 1972, I think it was, My dad drove back home in a Pontiac Catalina parked in front of our house, and it went and made all these weird noises, and then this foam started pouring out of under the hood down our street, which was on a hill, and this like sea of foam started going all the way down the hill. And we're like, that's not good. Well, it turned out that the coolant was low, and the only liquid they had was beer. So they filled the radiator with beer, and indeed, it got them home, and it made the engine okay. However, once they stopped, all that warm, fizzy beer decided it had had enough, and it got out of the car. And I don't know, it was just kind of funny. Number four, check your wipers. Check them before you go, but do give them some attention. Sometimes if your wipers are acting up while you're driving on long trips, they just need to be cleaned. You can actually clean your wipers. What I typically do is when I'm cleaning the window with my squeegee, you know, at the gas station, if they happen to have one, I'll do that on the wipers too. I'll squeegee the wipers, and that'll help them last longer too. It'll just get some dirt off of them. Number five, washer fluid. I told a tale from the road about washer fluid being empty in a talking car and driving across Alligator Alley in the 70s when or the 80s, I can't remember which, but yeah, no, you want to have washer fluid. And just like with coolant, washer fluid is mostly about the water. So if it's not freezing cold out, you can fill it with water if you have to. You can even dump ice in there. You know, if you got like a Coke and you drank all the Coke and it's just ice left in the cup and you're low on washer fluid, yeah, you can go ahead and dump that in there. That's fine. Washer fluid is nothing but water, methanol, and a blue dye, usually. There's other colors. So it's the water that's doing all the work. And unless it's winter, you can go ahead and put whatever you want in there. Number six, check for leaks. As you're walking around the car, just poke your head under there and look for leaks. Now, this can be kind of hard in a gas station because everything's leaking there all the time. But just take a look, you know. And if you stop for a meal, see if you can park on a clean piece of pavement and then come out and look. And that's a good sign that you're not leaking. If it looks good under there, it's fine. Now, your car will leak water in the summer. If you have air conditioning, there is going to be water leaking out. That is normal. In fact, if there isn't, if there's not a little puddle of water under your car, then something's either wrong with your air conditioner or the tube that leads from the condenser in the car to the outside of the car, it is probably disconnected or clogged, and that means all that water is going into your vehicle, possibly under the rug on the passenger side. And if you ever notice you have a damp rug on the passenger side, it's almost always that air conditioning hose. So fix that. That's not hard to fix. You just have to dig it out. Number seven, do not forget to peek in the back of your van. Stuff goes on back there while you're driving, and it's always important every time you stop to just take a look back there and see, you know, did you forget to lock some of the drawers? Did the fridge fly open and everything fly? I mean, you've all had these experiences. Any of you who have done van life have had these experiences where stuff has done stuff in the back while you're driving. So make sure you take a peek in back. And number eight, while you're peeking back there, you want to check the fridge temp. If you're using your fridge, check the temp every time you stop, because you could lose all your food otherwise. Maybe the plug wiggled loose. Maybe you blew a fuse, whatever the case may be. You want to check that fridge. And another thing you can do with that ice left over from your drink that you got at the Buc-ee's or wherever, you can put that ice in a bag and put it in the fridge. It's going to help keep it cold. You know, just it's a cold thing. Any cold thing you put in the fridge is going to help. So, you know, it's not going to help a lot, but it could help a little. Also, check your voltages. When you go back there, see if your leisure battery is being charged. You know, if you're using a split charge or you're using a battery-to-battery charger, make sure that that charge looks right, because there may be a switch that needs to be thrown, or you could have blown a fuse. But it would be terrible to drive for 10 hours and then get to your boondocking site and find out that your batteries in the back were dead because you left something on or something went wrong. So check that. I've had that happen to me. That is no fun. And number 10, and I'm quite serious about this, check yourself. Seriously, go into the bathroom, do your thing, and then look at yourself in the mirror and ask yourself if you're okay, if you're in good shape to continue on. Because you don't have to. You know, if you're not okay, it's okay to take a break. It's okay to spend the night in the parking lot of the Loves or whatever if you have to. That is probably more important than anything else I ever said. Check in on yourself, and you'll know. You'll know. And, you know, you might not be in the best mood or whatever. Maybe you just got cut off, or maybe you had a bad sandwich at Arby's. I don't know. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about overall, are you in good shape? And if you're not, think about what you can do to get in good shape, because being in good shape in that regard makes you a much better and much safer driver, and we all appreciate that. Thank you to Bianca and G Money for helping to support the show this week. I absolutely appreciate your support and the support of everyone, especially those monthly donors who visit buymeacoffee.com/built-to-go. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. And you'll see an option there to buy me a gallon of diesel. And everybody who does that helps keep this podcast ad-free. We all appreciate that, don't we? Thank you. Tech Talk. I have been messing around lately with Android radios, and this is worth considering. So a lot of us drive older rigs, and we have stereos that just aren't up to modern standards, basically meaning we can't hook our phones up to them. Sure, Bluetooth has been around for a while, and you've always, well, at least mostly always, have that aux port that you can plug into. Not if you've got a 2011 Sprinter. But a lot of you are going to be replacing your radios, and it seems daunting, but it's getting a lot easier. And one of the things that's making it easier is this flood of fairly inexpensive Android radio head units that are coming. And I've been playing with one a lot recently, and it's a really interesting approach. So basically what these things are is an inexpensive, like $150, $200 Android tablet that's built into a box that you put in your dashboard. And that tablet has apps that will run Android Auto and CarPlay, but you don't need to use those because the Android tablet itself can do everything you need. It can play music, it has GPS, it can do all kinds of maps. As long as it has a Wi-Fi connection, you've got a fully functioning Android tablet that will do whatever you want. And I'm like, this is a great solution. Like, if you were lost or something and you wanted to Google where was a good place to eat, you could pull over to a truck stop or whatever and just pull up Google and type in, you know, where's the best place to eat in Amarillo, Texas, or wherever you happen to be, and it would tell you, hopefully, as long as you have internet connection. And then, of course, if you hook it up to your phone, you've got CarPlay or Android, which is basically what people want these days. I mean, most people I talk to who have used CarPlay and Android Auto, that's what they want. They don't ever want to drive without it again. These are really changing the world, I think, for those of us who are going to put in aftermarket radios. And I just installed one on a vehicle, and I was astonished that it was completely plug and play. I didn't have to cut a single wire. I didn't have to buy an interface, and everything in the vehicle works. Now, a lot of modern vehicles have a CAN bus connection to the radio, and the radio, especially in Dodges, Rams, or, you know, if you're driving a ProMaster, you know about Uconnect. That is often accessed through the radio. These radios support that. These Android tablets actually support those CAN bus settings, and you can change things. Anyway, this is something to consider, and I may have a review, a very detailed review on a specific one coming up. But I just want you to be aware that these Android head units are a new concept, and they really change the playing field for those of us who replace the radios in our vehicles. And also, I mean, heck, you could put one in the back, too. It would be, you'd have a, like, imagine this, you have an Android tablet built into the wall, hooks up to internet, and then you can use it to Google or show recipes while you're cooking or whatever. It's just basically an Android tablet built into the wall. That might have some solutions, too, and it can be your stereo for the entire back. You can do your Spotify and your Google Music or whatever the heck the kids are doing these days. I don't know. I'm an old guy. So, anyway, something to consider. I don't have any links in the show notes for this one. This is, I want to introduce the concept to you of the Android radio head unit. And, oh, yes, it does do the radio, too. Yes, there's an app that will actually be the radio for you, and that does not use the internet. Product review. It is said that there are certain things that you should never skimp on, and one of those is a bed, because you're going to be spending so much time there. And another one, in my opinion, is your phone holder in your vehicle. Because if that is not a good thing, it is going to drive you crazy. This is going to drive me crazy. And I have bought so many of these things. And some of them are just utterly frustrating. Nearly all the ones that connect to a vent are useless. Especially these days, where phones are actually getting bigger and heavier. It's one of the few things that in our lives is getting bigger and heavier. Everything else tends to be getting lighter and smaller. Well, except vehicles and people. All right, never mind. But anyway, I found one that I like, and I really like it. Now, this is a MagSafe suction mount phone holder. Now, MagSafe is an Apple thing. This is only for iPhones. You don't know what is going on with Android and magnetic charging, so to speak, so I can't speak to that. However, this is a good one, and it's $70, which is not cheap, but this could be the one that you will buy and forget about for a couple of reasons. First off, it's MagSafe. MagSafe is the term for Macs and iPhones for their charging. They basically charge with magnets. The magnets don't do the charging. The magnets hold the connectors together. For this, I literally put my phone on this little pad, and that's it. The phone is held in place, and it is charged, and I don't have to think about it. When I stop, I can just grab my phone. I don't have to unplug anything. It's perfect. It charges fast. This is what's special about this. So it is a suction cup mount. You can mount it to your windshield or any flat spot, and of course it comes with one of those plastic disc stickers, so you can attach it to that too. Mine fits perfectly on a little flat spot on my dashboard, and that's what I do. And then coming off of it, there's a cord, of course, because you have to get some power to the thing. So the cord comes down, and then it ends up, the cord is just a USB-C cord. It's nothing fancy. But this thing comes with a 20-watt charger that plugs right into your cigarette lighter outlet. The charger alone is worth some money. This is fast charging. It's as fast as my iPhone can charge. And that is wonderful. And it's especially useful because if you are using an aftermarket radio, like we talked about before, a lot of the times the USB ports those come with aren't enough to charge modern phones. Like if you're using your phone as a GPS or playing music or whatever, it actually could be using more power than the charger produces, and you could lose power instead of gaining it. This thing prevents that for me. It's very solid. It's very adjustable. The phone absolutely hangs onto that thing, and it will only fall off if somehow you hit the phone. I haven't had it come off on bumps or anything like that. And it's just one cord you have to run down somewhere in your vehicle, and then it goes into the cigarette lighter. I do. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. I like it. It's a lot of money. There are certainly much cheaper ways to attach your phone to your car. And if you have CarPlay that requires wiring, which a lot of people do, this won't help that much because you still have to be plugged into your unit. I believe if you have your phone plugged in and on MagSafe, it's going to choose the plug-in to charge, not the MagSafe. But I'm not really sure about that. I've never tried it. I'm currently using wireless CarPlay these days. So anyway, I'll have a link in the show notes. If you are tired of playing around with this crap and you have a modern iPhone, this could be the one true last phone holder you buy for your vehicle. Dales from the road. I moved to Chicago in 2010. Very tumultuous time in my life. I was all over the place. And basically, I moved to Chicago because my girlfriend lived in Chicago, and she made a heck of a lot more money than I did. So when we started dating, we were like, who's going to move? And, well, it was me. I ended up being the one that moved, which is fine. So she had this penthouse kind of apartment in this building in the South Loop of Chicago. Really nice place, really nice spot. You could see the Sears Tower, a.k.a. the Willis Tower, a.k.a. whatever the heck they're going to name it next. And the skyline was just, it was a really interesting, nice place to live. And the only problem was there's no parking. So the first thing I had to do was sell my truck. I had a Honda Ridgeline at the time. And then I had no vehicle at all to my name for quite a while. So my tales from the road from those days don't involve me driving my own vehicle because I did not own one. But I had a place to live, and I had a wonderful girlfriend, and she had in-laws that lived right across the street. Now, I know that sounds like a nightmare for most people, but, you know, they seemed like nice enough folks. I didn't know them very well because, you know, obviously I just knew their daughter. So she would go off to work, and I worked from home, as I've done for many, many years, and you're in an apartment building. And when you have trash in an apartment building, you usually have a trash chute, and the trash chute is in the hall. So you take your trash bag, and you go into your hall, and you throw the trash down, and you go back to your apartment, and then you realize the door locked behind you, and you're standing there without any shoes or keys. The only thing you have is your phone, because you're addicted to it, and you carry it with you everywhere, even when you take the trash out, which is a good thing in this case. So I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I can't even walk anywhere because I don't have shoes. So I thought about calling my girlfriend, but she worked half an hour away and she's a doctor. It's not like I'm going to interrupt her day and have her come let me in. That was not going to happen. And I thought, oh no, I know what I have to do. The in-laws have a key. I have to call the in-laws and say, hey, I've locked myself out of the apartment. And I have no shoes, so I can't even come get the key from you. could you come over and let me borrow the key? Now, fortunately, they lived across the street, which was a very good thing in this case. And my father-in-law, Andy, walked across the street. He was on the 17th floor, so I meet him in the lobby with no shoes. And we get in the elevator, and as we're riding up, I said, you know, I'm really embarrassed by this. I don't know you guys very well, and I'm sure this isn't making a good first impression, but I really appreciate you coming over to rescue me from this situation. And he says, you know, one time I was in a board meeting, and we were discussing a new budget, and somebody wanted to buy a new vehicle, and we were wondering if it would fit the budget or not, and I just looked at it, and I saw how expensive it was, and I said, look, this thing costs an arm and a leg. And then I looked up at the guy who was presenting the budget, and I realized he only had one arm. And I had just said that in front of him. So don't feel bad. These things happen to everybody. And at that moment, I realized I had made an excellent choice into which family I was eventually going to marry into. I have the best in-laws ever, and I wish for you the same. If you can somehow manage that, your in-laws are not as important as your significant other, but boy, they're important. I'm very happy with mine. By the way, if you hear some loud noises, there are certain noises you hear on this podcast from time to time. There's a loud clacking noise that comes from my chair that Luke from Finland actually said, what the heck is that noise? And yeah, it's that you hear that once in a while. But today is practice for the Air and Water Show in Chicago, and I swear they're flying right outside my window. So if you hear whooshing noises, it's not me having trouble breathing. It's actually some sort of fighter jets flying by my window. So I apologize. A place to visit. Deep in the woods of New Hampshire lies a mystery beyond... No, it's not quite that exciting, but there is something interesting out there in the woods of New Hampshire. This is called Madame Sherry's Castle. Madame Sherry's Castle. I mean, that's kind of exciting in and of itself, but it's an interesting place because it has an interesting story. So this is in Chesterfield, New Hampshire. It's in the southwestern part of New Hampshire, so fairly easy to get to from Massachusetts, just like most of New Hampshire, which is why they have clever nicknames for the people from Massachusetts. And the story, I'll tell you the story really quick, but you should do your own research and go visit this place to see it. Madame Sherry was a socialite. Her name was Madame Antoinette Sherry, and she was a costume designer from New York. And she started buying land in Chesterfield, New Hampshire, to kind of basically to get out of New York City in the summers. This was a common thing back then. You've heard of the Borscht Belt in the Catskills. This is a similar phenomenon. It's that everybody wanted to leave New York City in the summer because it was hot, it's before air conditioning, and it stank. So she started buying up this place in Chesterfield, New Hampshire, which, you know, was nowhere. And she built a castle, this huge stone castle on the property. And then, of course, she invited all her friends up. So this is like the female Gatsby. She had these massive parties out there in the woods, and all kinds of debauchery happened, supposedly. And built this beautiful, it's not really a castle, it's a stone house, but it was really, really nice. And then she ran out of money. 1920s, right? What happened after 1920s? 1930s. What happened in the 1930s? Yeah, the Great Depression. She ran out of money, place was abandoned, and it sat there until 1962, completely empty and looking more and more haunted and such. And then it burned to the ground. So why am I telling you to go visit this place that burned to the ground? Because I said it was made out of stone, and in fact, not much of the house remains, but it had this elaborate stone staircase that went around the outside of the building to the second floor, which is where she entertained, and that survived. So what you have today in the woods of New Hampshire is this stone staircase that just goes up in the air and stops. And this is not a little thing. This goes maybe 15 or 20 feet into the air. It has caused the locals to call this the Stairway to Heaven. Yes, and it's claimed that if you listen closely, you'll hear the faint strains of laughter and music coming from the ruins. Or not. You may not actually hear that, but, you know, if you want to try to hear it, you can. Or you can just bring your own, too. So, anyway, I'll have a link in the show notes. It is not the kind of place that has an address, you have to follow directions to get there unless you can find the GPS coordinates, which are not on this article I have. But yeah, it's a very cool thing to see. And I've had friends go there. I've actually not been, believe it or not, but given that I live there, my friends who've been there said it's very, very well worth seeing. And it's not that far from civilization. So one note, though, please. Over time, this structure's gotten a little bit weaker, so don't climb the stairs. Take pictures, do all kinds of selfies and stuff like that. But yeah, please don't climb on the stairs. They're not safe. Resource recommendation. So a lot of my planning this week has involved weather. You know, I plan these trips, and I have to figure out what the weather is ahead of time so I know what I'm planning for. And so I'm going to Budapest and Prague in November. I don't know what it's like in those places in November. I mean, is it like Chicago? Is it colder? Is it warmer? Is it likely to snow? So I need to figure these things out in order to know what to pack and what to tell other people, because obviously I'm organizing trips and bringing people with me. I need resources for that. And one that's really easy that I found, which would help you guys too, because if you're trying to plan a van life trip, like for example, you want to go to Death Valley. What's Death Valley like in May? Is it 110 degrees? Is it 40 degrees? What is it? Well, this website will help you. And it is wonderground.com/history. This is the Weather Underground, which weirdly got its name from a terrorist group. I don't quite understand how that happened. But Weather Underground is wonderground with a U, wonder with a U, ground.com. And it's one of the big weather sites. You've probably heard of it. But if you put a slash history at the end of the URL, you can bring up historic weather data for any place in the world, basically. And you just go there, and you'll see you type in the place and a date. Now, you have to pick a date. It won't work if you don't put in a date. So put in last year's date. And sure, last year could have been an outlier, but it doesn't matter. Because what it then presents you is a giant page of all kinds of data about what the weather was like a year ago. And then it will show you the historic highs, the historic lows, the historic averages, how much precipitation you can expect. And basically, you get the most complete picture of what the weather was like in a place and what you can expect if you go there in the future. So to try it out here, let's say I want to go to Stovepipe Wells, which is in Death Valley. If you've been to Death Valley, probably been to Stovepipe Wells. But anyway, and I'm going to go in May. So I'm going to put in May 15th, 2023. I could do 24, I guess, but whatever. And I'll hit view. Now, what does it say here? So what do you think? What was your guess on the temperature of Death Valley in May? Well, the answer is the high was 96 that day, and the low looks like it was about 70. Now, is that normal? Death Valley's been having crazy weather lately. And it is actually not normal. That is above average. Average historic high is 88, and it was 96 on that day. The average historic low is 65. The record high was 107. The record low was 44. The dew point was 36.75. That's not a lot of humidity. It was very, very dry. And you can get the sunrise and sunset, too. The sunrise is at 5:38, sunset's at 7:40. And then it even goes further. It gives you hour-by-hour reports of the weather conditions. So this is as good as it's going to get, folks. If you need to do historic weather research, this site is as good as any. They're all getting their data from the same place. All the data comes from the government. But the interface matters. This interface, it does have a couple of ads, but it's pretty easy. And heck, if you want to upgrade, you can subscribe to Weather Underground and they'll get rid of the ads. So remember that URL, wonderground.com/history, and you can look up the weather history of any place, which will tell you what to expect when you go there yourself. Well, folks, thank you for joining me once again for Built to Go, and this is episode 223, and the music is by Simon Wegg, as always. Thank you so much for joining me here. If you need to get a hold of me for any reason, I am jeff@builttogo.com. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. Send me your address. I will send you a sticker. And until next time, remember the words of my personal friend, Pink Floyd, who said, "The show."